Today is June 9th, 2019. This is Mobile Views Podcast 294. I'm Todd Agassa Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to pretty much focus on the Apple's recent Worldwide Developer Conference, WWDC, which happened about a week ago. And I was just telling John before I hit the record button that I did not expect to hear so many big announcements. I kind of thought it'd be another incremental update and that'd be that, but that was not that. Did you have the same feeling, John?
A lot of announcements across all of the product range.
Yeah.
So I think you've been very used to a year that really improved iOS or a year that really improved Apple Watch or something like that. I don't think we've been quite used to having so much across everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the smallest update, ironically, is, maybe as usual, Mac OS. And even then, there's some interesting features coming to Mac OS.
So. Absolutely. I was really surprised that the first one, the one that got the most play is iTunes, as we know it, is gone. And it's going to be replaced by separate apps. For those of us who've been using iPhone and iPad, that's kind of old news. And it's just matching up what we've become accustomed to. And quite frankly, I haven't used iTunes on my Mac in I don't know how long.
I use it quite a bit.
Really?
In fact, yeah. The thing I'm actually wondering about with iTunes is the automatic playlists. Because that was something that required iTunes to do some heavy lifting. So I'm really hoping that feature stays in the new music app. But otherwise, I will not miss the interface in a sense. I mean, I can kind of take it or leave it. So.
Yeah, and I just received a notification. Let me see if I can bring it up here. I just received a notification that there is a macOS update waiting for me, which does. And this is not the smart. I should have done this before. But if I recall correctly, it had something to do with iTunes. It says checking for updates. Well, when we get to it, when it finishes checking for updates. But in any case, the other big thing, and I'm kind of working my way up to the biggest change, I think. Yeah, kind of going backwards in the list I actually typed, is Sidecar, which Sherlock's a whole bunch of applications, including one I've been using called Duet, to let me use my iPad as a secondary macOS screen.
Yeah, I'll be very interested. Now, this is also a feature that is only coming to relatively new MacBooks.
Yeah.
So even my 2015 MacBook Pro, which is the newest Mac I own, won't be able to use it apparently at launch. But yeah, there have been a lot of third-party options for this all the way back to probably iOS or, the first or second iPad. We've been doing this for a while in various forms of successfulness, in a sense. Sometimes it works really well, other times it works really poorly. So it's interesting to see Apple co-opt that. It's also interesting the sort of use that they see for it when you look at the marketing imagery where you've got someone not really using it as two displays, but mirroring the same display and interacting with it using an Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
I mean, it says you can use it as an extended display, so I'm sure you'll be able to do that.
Right,
but also the mirroring looks sort of cool. The company that I would guess should be maybe a little concerned is Wacom, since that's sort of the use scenario they're showing right now. Although they have a very devoted group of, professionals that use their products. But.
Right. And actually, it has a huge advantage over the Wacom tablets in that you can see what you're drawing on. It's like, you're literally drawing on an iPad. So, I was going to say it's like drawing on an iPad, but that's actually what you're doing. You just happen to be doing it on a mirrored Mac display. It's fascinating, and I don't know enough about the artist tools on the Mac itself to make a comment, but I would think it's a big deal. Oh, I'm just looking at my Mac OS 10.14.15 update. And it says basically it's 2.6 gigs of update for macOS and a smaller 108 megabyte iTunes device support update. I assume that's for the new iPod Touch and things like that, which we're not really even going to talk much about, I think. Adds AirPlay 2 support, ability to follow magazine, I don't really care. Improves audio latency on newer MacBook Pros. Nothing else I care about, I guess. Hey, are you still using Apple News Plus on your iOS devices?
I am, and I am still opening it up fairly regularly to use it. So I've been fairly happy with it, although it would be nice to see them continue to build it out. I think we're about ready okay, we've got the magazines, that's cool, but really start inking those deals with some of the content providers. You know, it would have been really nice if they would have gotten like New York Times and a few others, but maybe, hopefully, there's still work on those at some point.
Yeah. So the big deal for from my perspective, the big deal of macOS Catalina, I think it's his name, macOS Catalina update is iPad app support, which I assume is a big deal for developers, but is it? You think it's important for regular people?
I think about the interfaces on iOS that there are very few, but there are occasionally times where I thought, gee, I wish the macOS version looked like that, or I wish that they would use that same sort of setup. And so I can see that being useful. And also just having a single binary. So the idea that if you have an app that you want to change fairly often, only having to have one version of it might be very nice and be able to grab the macOS market. I really hate to say it, but especially with the changes we'll talk about coming to iPadOS, the newly renamed, I guess, fork of iOS, how long will we still be using MacBooks or using laptops in general? I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but it bears discussing.
I'm going to have to continue using a MacBook until I can record a Skype call on an iPad. Or if I get uncheap and buy into a service that you know, lets me record in a cloud. But right now, it's so much more inexpensive for me to simply, you know, record over Skype and then save it up to my podcasting service, which is relatively inexpensive. I think it's about $50 a year. So, and, you know, of course, let me edit and level our volumes and all that sort of thing. Oh, by the way, I think I found a solution for that, because Levelator, the free app I've been using for nearly 11 years now, is a 32-bit app and won't be supported in the next rev of macOS. So, after Catalina, I think. So,
well, it is sort of interesting to think about Apple's view of the world. And one of the things that I don't know if we have it on our list, but we can discuss about that, is the new HomeKit video support.
Oh, we don't, but I'm happy to. Yeah.
And I'll only talk about that really briefly as sort of an interesting, first of all, if I had to think of a company in the tech landscape that I would trust holding on to video, it would probably have to be Apple, maybe Microsoft, definitely not Google, and definitely not any of the manufacturers, oddly enough, of cameras. Having bought, you know, cameras for my house and things like that, those manufacturers really don't seem like they quite understand technology, even though they're producing a technology product. So I think, A, they're about one of the only companies that could pull off doing that. But if that is the approach, think about sort of the, I guess, ecosystem that starts to build. The idea that, you know what, if we wanted to record a podcast, we record it into the cloud, we use a tool in the cloud that edits it and then moves it straight over to a podcast publication service. All of that could be cloud-based fairly easily, and then it would remove needing physical computing hardware. We continue to make that march back toward dumb terminals, which is kind of ironic when you think about it.
You know, going back to the iOS app support on Macs that's coming up in macOS Catalina, I was going to say it does harken back to Apple widgets. You remember those in macOS? They're introduced, I don't know when. And then, did they go away? I think they're gone now, right? Or are they still in somewhere hidden, like Launchpad? Nope, Launchpad is apps.
No, they're gone. And in fact, they'll be fully gone in Catalina. So it's really weird. They've slowly been transitioning. Sort of if you look at 5 years ago with like OS 10 Mavericks and those sorts of things, you still had, although it wasn't as prominent, the little spaces, or no, expose, whatever they called it. They have 100 of these buzzword names. And then just about the time they started de-emphasizing that on macOS, they started adding it to iOS. And now it's kind of come full circle. iOS has all of those cool things, and macOS, they've literally taken them out of.
Yeah, but it is going to get apps, iOS apps, so literally full circle. Okay, we're still not at our favorite, more at least my favorite topic, iPadOS. But iOS 13, They made a couple of interesting claims, and I didn't do a deep dive into them, but one is app downloads will be 50% smaller. So I don't know if they're compressing and then unpacking, and updates will be 60% smaller. So that's a bit of digital magic.
You had put in the show notes, how are they doing that? I have no idea. That's a good question.
We've got to do a deep dive into that, see what they're doing. I'm sure Sandeep has some kind of explanation. Okay, the next one, I'm still trying to figure out why I should be excited. Dark mode with dynamic wallpapers, John.
I've told 3 or 4 people in the last week that I think I am the only person on the planet that doesn't care about dark mode.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I don't care. I don't know if it's just all marketing buzz. Maybe there are people that really love it. But I've had people say, oh, why don't you turn on dark mode, this and that. I'm like, I just don't. I don't love it as much as others. And, in fact, every time I turn it on, in fact, I will – we'll run this little experiment now and see if it changes before the end of the podcast or the next podcast. I'll go into my settings on macOS Mojave, and I will change the dark mode, and we'll just see how long it lasts.
All right. I think, by the way, I'm looking at my screen now. I think I am running dark mode on my MacBook, and I don't have I've turned on dark mode in YouTube for my iPad, and it's okay. You know, I didn't turn it back to the original, so I guess I like it. I'm not demanding it. It's not like, oh gosh, you know, my iPad's still running iOS 10, so I can run my favorite game, Civilization Revolution. It's going to get upgraded to 13 just so I can get dark mode and lose Civilization, so to speak. But yeah. And dynamic wallpapers. I've had dynamic wallpapers on my Android device for a while, so, and I really don't use them.
I had those on my Android devices too. And what I actually noticed was that my Android devices ran quite a bit slower whenever I don't know if modern day Android does the same thing.
Yeah.
That was always a frustration with a dynamic wallpaper on Android.
Okay, another one I'm scratching my head on is keyboard swipe support. I thought we already had this.
We have it with third-party applications, but we do not have it with native.
Really?
Which, my wife is a big fan of...
I could have sworn we did.
My wife's a big fan of Swipe.
I like Swipe, yeah.
I don't use it that often, but I might start using it because every time I would install a third-party keyboard that had it, it ran so... You know, third-party keyboards on iOS just run horribly. They don't really run smoothly in any way. So I've never really used them much, but maybe if they are now something Apple, you know, swipe something Apple built and it has that Apple advantage, then maybe I'll start using it again.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say that I use gesture typing or whatever you want to call it, swiping on my Android phone, my Pixel 3a right now, quite a bit, mostly because for whatever reason, I can type fairly well on an iOS device, probably because it auto-corrects me correctly, but I cannot type well on a similarly sized Android phone. I'm just not sure why.
Have you done the experiment I've done where you start to realize just how horribly you type on a mobile device and how reliant on autocorrect you are?
Oh, yes. Oh, I don't have to run the experiment. I just know that. It's remarkable how accurate it is. Except for that one time, I think I told you the story. I probably told you the story 10 times. Where I was texting my wife saying I had an appointment at my doctor's, my MD, and so I typed in, and I was going to be later, you know, later than usual or something. I said, FYI, going to see my MD, and autocorrect decided that FYI was dying, and so what I did, the text message I said was, dying, going to see my MD.
Yeah, that could be concerning. I could see your wife having questions about that.
So, and I didn't catch it until I actually, you know, hit the send button because, you know, you're usually kind of in a rush. Okay, so keyboard swipe is new.
And then your response was, not really dying.
Yeah, yet. Okay. Yet. Eventually, but not today. Okay, so keyboard swipe is new in iOS. The next one, they're saying that the reminder app is being completely rewritten. And I'm just trying to figure out I didn't do a deep dive into that either. But I like the reminder app. I'm not sure what I need to add to it. It works just fine for me.
My request would be start and end dates.
Okay.
Because we can do reminders, and it's built on the CalDAV protocol, so it should be able to do a start date and an end date.
Yeah.
That's all I want. Like a start and a due date. But I don't think we're getting either of those, because just the screenshots I've looked at, it doesn't seem like it. Apple's adding in cutesy things, which, you know, that's what they do. So,
you know, I have to say the biggest draw of Reminder for me is its ability to remind me using a geofence. You know, once I get near something, like, I don't know when I'm going to go to the grocery store or Costco or whatever, but when I do go, I need to pick up this thing specifically in addition to whatever else I buy. And, you know, that for me is the number one use for Reminder for me. It's like, when I get somewhere, I'll type in where I parked my car. And when I approach the parking garage again, they'll tell me I am parked on level, you know, 4, section whatever. And, oh, yeah, okay, that's where I parked. So
for me, awesome. I use Reminders pretty much exclusively for the pixel a day that I do. So
that's the
day I started in January. And so every day it pops up and reminds me to do it. And I can tap on a workflow using Siri shortcuts that opens up the Excel spreadsheet directly, and I can put in my little rating for that day. So I basically was very happy with that solution because it stopped me from having to download a dedicated app for it.
Yeah. You got to show us what your graphic pixel a day looks like at some point, because they're different colors, right?
Yeah. And numbers. You can actually see the numbers in it. So at some point, I will definitely share it at the end of the year. I have a lot more average days than I thought I was going to have. But
really? What did you think?
I guess the norm. Well, so when you do this whole thing of tracking what your day should be
like,
about mid-January, I had the epiphany that was, gee, I keep marking that I'm having 4 out of 5 days, you know, above average.
Good days.
And then I realized, but if I keep saying I'm having above average days, then what is average?
Right.
So I sort of re-leveled myself in February, March, so that average truly was, you know, what most people would consider a good day, a fairly, you know, stressless day, et cetera, et cetera. That, I guess, is what we should all want for our average day.
Right. Otherwise, you live in Lake Wobegon, and, you know, where all children are above average.
Exactly. So that's the only thing that you notice, is that my January is an above average month, and then my February, March, April are all average. But yeah, I really do enjoy doing this. And in the past couple of since I got disciplined enough to actually do this every night, for about the past almost 80 or 90 days, I've at least opened up Day One, which is the app I use for journaling, and at least written something in there, even if it's just a sentence or two on what the day, what I did during the day. Sometimes it's these very long entries, sometimes it's just a sentence or two. Because otherwise, all I have in there are like Facebook posts and Twitter posts and my public life, but I don't have much of
right.
My private.
So there's no journaling or logging of text in Pixel a Day, or whatever, it sounds like?
No, there really isn't. It's just a number, you know, 1 through 5.
Hmm.
Did you have a great day, a horrible day, or somewhere in between?
Yeah.
But it does, at least, it gives me some interesting perspective, and I am seeing some trends where certain times of the month are usually tend to be pretty low stress. Other times tend to be more. And then, of course, the few days I've not hit any one days.
Yeah.
I've not had any truly horrible days.
Yeah.
But I have had 2 or 3 of the number 2 out of 5s. And so it's interesting to reflect on what happened on those days, kind of what made me feel that negative about that day. So.
Right. And we should note that John is a, you know, psychologist and a statistician. So he looks at this in more detail than the rest of us. And an academic.
That's a fair assessment.
Okay.
I'm very interested in the next year, you know, comparing year over year and those sorts of things.
Yeah. Right. Now, that's going to be, if you continue to do this long term, it'll be fascinating, you know, longitudinal study on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be like kind of the inward Piaget, you know, looking at yourself instead of your kids. Okay, a Street View-like feature in Apple Maps. I don't use Apple Maps. I'm not super excited. John?
I use Apple Maps.
Do you? Why do you use it?
I actually mix it up between Apple Maps, Google Maps, and Waze. Those are the three mapping apps that I use, and I've only recently added Waze in, but I like anything that makes mapping faster, better, etc. I mean, Google Maps is the gold standard in many ways. But in fact, I just recently started playing around with the timeline feature on Google Maps. Do you play with that at all?
Yes, I really enjoy the timeline feature.
I didn't realize that it's been tracking my timeline now since 2013.
Yeah, I was going to say for like a long time. 12, 13.
So I go back sometimes and go, wow, I can't believe I still... Like, for example, when we went to Florida, I actually had the previous Florida trip in there without realizing it, because that was in 2013. So I guess that was the benefit of being an early Android adopter.
I'm not sure how far back my Google Maps history goes, but it goes back pretty far. So, you know, I can see little flights and things I took and you know, various trips or even just going back and forth around this place. You know, it's really kind of interesting. You know, where in the world am I? Or was I?
Where in the world is...
So why do you use Apple Maps instead of Google Maps sometimes? Just to change it up?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, it's there. So it's the default mapping application, and it works 90% of the time for what I need it. The only time I ever absolutely have to pull into Google Maps is to use Google location sharing. Mm-hmm. So I've got friends on Android that we share our location back and forth with, including my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I kind of know if they're home and things like that. And then I also have started exploring that timeline feature. So
it's truly fascinating, actually. Because, you know, over time, like you said, even, you know, we forget where we've gone sometimes, or at least when we've gone. Okay, the next feature is really kind of interesting. It's called Find Mine. Those people familiar with Find My iPhone, you know, probably know what it is. Except, this can find your device when it's offline, because apparently the Bluetooth beacon is on. And I'm trying to figure out what this means. So, if you're in airplane mode, shouldn't the Bluetooth be off? Or is the Bluetooth... It sounds like the Bluetooth beacon is separate, which kind of makes me worried.
It makes me wonder. So these mesh networks, the way they've always worked in the past, the whole idea behind things like Tile and all that is that, if you lose your keys and someone who has the Tile app installed wanders by your keys, it'll pick up the beacon and it will send it to, you know, wherever it needs to go. And you'll know that your keys were left at the airport or something like that.
Right.
My bigger question is, does this mean now that if someone steals something of mine that I have one of these on, will their own iPhone or their own, you know, device give them away?
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing for, you know, honest people.
Yeah.
But it's a curious way of how are they implementing this and exactly how much control will people have over contributing to that mesh network. If it's an opt-out sort of thing, I think that's the best idea for implementation and also security and privacy. I really, really hope it's not an opt-in, because then I just don't see it taking off.
Yeah. But I do find it interesting, you know, that it can, even an offline device, it uses this... what they're calling a mesh network Bluetooth beacon to, you know, announce its presence to somebody running, presumably another iOS device, and say, hey, I see this, and let you know if that's yours. So the last thing I want to say about iOS 13 is something I didn't see announced, and it still doesn't include what Google calls Night Sight for their Android phones. Night Sight is a... If you have kids or pets or, you know, basically people running around in the dark, you know, people or pets running around, you know, for pets especially, right? I mean, taking night photos is a nightmare, no pun intended. But with Night Sight, it's like taking a shot in a day. It's pretty amazing. You can get very, very, very clear, you know, photos with nice lighting and relatively accurate colors. Where you really couldn't in the past. And John, you've probably seen, I've posted some side-by-sides of using the same phone with Night Sight on, Night Sight off. It's literally like night and day when you look at the photos. So,
yeah,
disappointing.
I guess we'll just continue to see. The Apple definitely does keep updating the, camera abilities of its devices, but maybe they just haven't figured out how to roll something like that out just yet.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, the camera app on the Pixels I've been using, the Pixel 2 and now the Pixel 3a, really has some interesting features that are not available in iOS, except, I suppose, through third-party apps. Some are super important to me, like for example, the Night Sight. Others are, you know, kind of interesting, like Photosphere is kind of neat. You can do the third-party app on Apple, of course. And Google Lens is integrated in the camera app now, which is kind of neat. And then the AR stuff, which is more just for fun, entertainment, the playground, what they call playground. There's Android also has a new feature called, a new-ish feature, I think, called Photo Booth, which essentially waits until you smile before it takes your photo. And so I tried it, and basically it wouldn't take my photo at all. It works for my daughter.
It just tells you just need to smile more.
Yeah. So my daughter's able to use it, but I couldn't. Okay. The next thing is the one I'm just incredibly fascinated with, because it came out of nowhere for me, and that's iPadOS. At first I thought, there is just branding, you know, a new way to sell more iPads by saying it has its own OS. But the more I read about it or listened to it during the keynote, it's like, whoa, this is pretty cool.
There's
stuff.
A lot of stuff going on with it. Yeah. And there's, we could have done a whole podcast just on iPadOS.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I am very interested to see how much. So I've been carrying around a full size iPad again for about a year and a half. And yep. I even stopped carrying around my Surface Pro. My Surface Pro now just lives at my one office at work.
Yeah.
And I've been happy with that one iPad, and now I'm wondering if I'm going to really be happy with it. Sort of like not have no sorts of complaints about what I'm doing. Because it just is really, really, full-featured when you look at what it's talking about.
Yeah, and you know, in fact, since you made that startling announcement that pretty much sent me into distress, where you said you needed to carry a regular laptop around with you a podcast or two ago, do you think you can get away with carrying just an iPad after this update?
It depends. Will iPads be able to how will we resurrect an iOS device that a 1.5-year-old has locked out?
Okay.
You know, if that can happen on an iPad, then I could go back to it.
That's still an edge case to me.
it's an edge case to the whole world. But that was the edge case that sort of was like, thank God I have this MacBook.
That's true. I can see that.
But yeah. I don't know. I really like, you know, there's still a part of me that's the old network sort of admin, you know, need to have an actual laptop just in case a server somewhere goes down. Within the next month, I'm hoping to decommission the last bare hardware server that I work off of. Everything else that I have responsibility for will be in the cloud. And so I might be able to say I don't need to run weird little apps or things like that to do my little bit of consulting that I do. So.
Okay. So let's go through some of the new features, some of which I'm still kind of questioning. I find them interesting, but still questioning. So number one that I'm just wondering if I'm even going to use is pinning widgets to home screen. I'm not sure I need that. I don't know.
There is so much unused space on the iOS home screen for an iPad. You know, on your iPhone, you don't realize it that much. But our friend Janik Park, for a long time, has talked about how there's just so much open space and nothing going on with it that he's felt very strongly that Apple needed to do something with it. And I've started to use the widgets in iOS, but I never remember to swipe over to them. So I've got this beautiful widget layout that I just don't use because I forget that I can swipe left and grab it. So I'm hoping that maybe I'll use it more if it's right up in front and center.
Interesting. See, I swipe to the left widget page or whatever you want to call it frequently because that's how I check my batteries, since I can no longer see a percentage at the top of my screen on my iPhone. On my iPad, I can, of course. But or you know, just checking what the attached Bluetooth device's battery level is. So I check it several times a day, and you know, then I look through I can see my dark sky widget for weather and news widget and other things. So I guess I'm a edge case too. looking at my iPad right now. Okay, so it sounds like you're going to use it. I don't know yet, but we'll wait and see. I should note that even on my Android phone, I don't use widgets, or I don't place widgets on my home screen much, mostly because the screen is too small to have a lot of widgets, and and some of them will break all the time. Like Google's own calendar widget breaks every week almost. And I have to remove it and put it back on to refresh it. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't even show my calendar. Okay, a couple other things. Let's see. Lower latency for the Apple Pencil. Full page screenshots. Okay, fine. I thought I could already do that. But Pixel Eraser, it's kind of interesting. And, of course, just taking regular screenshots by pulling a pencil to the bottom of the screen. Don't know if I'll ever use it, but you know, I assume people do documentation. That's going to be a big deal. The next one we kind of discussed, or did we discuss it earlier? And that's using the iPad as a second display for a Mac. So, and they're using it as what the Windows people call an extended display, where you're seeing two different things. You've been noting that you see like it being used as a mirror also. There is a mirror desktop, which is separate. So extended desktop and mirror desktop. You know, although I have Duet and I appreciated it being available the few times I used it, for a $20 app, I really didn't use it that often as I thought I was.
that's the weird thing. I bought Duet.
Yeah.
And I also bought Air Display, the first one that came out.
Yeah, I think I bought that too.
You know, many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And both of them, I had that exact same realization. I travel with both MacBook and iPad, and I sometimes have to do work, and I could pull out the iPad and set it up as a second display.
Yeah.
But I just don't. So I don't really know how much I will use it. And that's sort of where I'm at with that whole idea. I just, whenever I'm traveling, I guess I don't do enough serious work where I need something akin to dual monitors. Even though everywhere I do work, you know, my office at home and my two offices on campus, I have either dual monitors. On campus, I have dual 24-inch monitors in one office and a 27-inch cinema display in the other.
Yeah.
At home, I have a 27-inch cinema display, so I use large screens often. But when I'm traveling, I'm happy with my 13-inch MacBook screen or my 11-inch iPad screen.
It's amazing how adequate it is, right? I mean, you think no, but for most things, it's fine. Okay, continuing on with the pencil. Draw and sketch in apps. Continuity markup, which is kind of interesting. It says write and sketch on PDFs or markup your documents with a pencil and see the updates live on your Mac. That's sort of interesting. Create a sketch on your iPad using Apple Pencil, insert into any document on your Mac. So, you know, the iPad more as a Mac companion, maybe to make Macs more interesting again. I don't know. Certainly more useful to have them both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so text editing. Now, this is kind of interesting because, you know, my biggest problem with iOS devices for a number of years was it was so difficult to do much more than rudimentary text editing until Apple introduced finger cursor gestures on the iPad, where you know you use I think three fingers to tap it down, and then you can move a cursor like a mouse within a block of text, which is super useful. And that alone made it possible for me to edit and use my iPad a lot more than I had been, you know, before I have to feel like I need to move over to a Mac or to a PC. But apparently they have new gestures, which nobody's going to remember because most people don't know they have the cursor gesture, you know, until I tell them.
Well, it's funny. You talk about that, and I always forget how to do half those gestures.
Yeah, and so it's the only gesture I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And also there's going to be undo and redo gestures. So that's going to be interesting. So undo the simple three-finger swipe to the left or redo by three-finger swipe to the right. And I think it's a three-finger just press to do the cursor movement. So if you are lacking some digits on your hand due to some unfortunate accident or other things, it's, I don't know.
Ah, but the six-fingered man who killed Inigo Montoya's father will rule them all with this update. Yes, yeah. Apple and their gestures. So when I remember the gestures, I like them. I don't remember them half the time. And that's always been my issue with them.
Yeah, they always seem like a good idea if you only could remember what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
It's almost like there needs to be a cheat sheet. Or I don't know, maybe you can ask Siri. I've never tried, but maybe you can say, Siri, what's the gesture for... What are some cool gestures I could do? And you know, maybe Siri tells you.
Do you remember in the old days when we had little paper templates that fitted around our keyboards for WordPerfect and Microsoft Word and things? Right? Because we could never remember what was on the menus. We need a little paper template for our iPads that have all the finger gestures on it. So, you know, we have an instant reference. So if somebody could make a case that has a, you know, basically a bezel around the iPad with all the finger gestures as a reminder, that'd be awesome. They're free.
But it's on the wrong thing. I don't need it there. I need it, like, either as, like, a tattoo or gloves on my hand. Oh, that would be annoying. Every time Apple changed them, you had to get your tattoo updated.
That's the new gesture. I remember the guy with the Zune tattoo, but
yeah, that poor guy.
But we're not gonna go there, and we're not gonna get tattoos just to remember finger gestures. Okay, keyboard, QuickType keyboard, which we kind of discussed earlier. Swipe or tap to type. Yeah, alternate word options. Quick path language support, automatic language selection and dictation. Wait, dictation? Can we do dictation on iPad?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. How do you even start that? Is there a look? Let me look. How do you do dictation? Okay, as Todd tries to learn how to do something new, and okay, so I'm firing up my iPad, and I've highlighted this. Oh, there's a microphone right there. Enable dictation. Dictation. Okay. It was always there. I never knew it. I should try it sometime.
See, that tattoo wouldn't even help you in that case. You would.
Yeah. Ah, well. Okay. This is kind of interesting, although I think I'll never use it. Custom fonts. I guess, you know?
I don't understand that one either. The only way I'd ever... I guess there are some things that I have the fonts for. So, for example, our university uses very specific fonts. I do have copies of those fonts so that when I'm putting things together, I can... You know, use the right typeset. But other than that, I have the app that lets you build your own font. There's a few of those on iOS, but those aren't too hard to export. They just export to TTF, and then you can use them on your computer and all that. So
I guess
fonts.
Yeah. I can see if you're some kind of designer, you know, like you do layouts for magazines, but who has magazines anymore? You know, that sort of thing. I guess that would be one thing, but it just seems such like a niche market. Not sure. You know, I did want to go back to one thing about dictation above. I can't do dictation. I mean, I've tried it. I'm amazed at people who can write by talking, because I guess I am so inept at speaking. I can't put together a bunch of words in a sentence that sounds anything like what you would want on paper. It'd be filled with a bunch of uhs and ums, and, you know, those sort of interstitials. Don't know how that would work. If you've ever watched old movies, John, you might be too young to have seen these movies. They used to be on TV when they used to show old movies before Netflix. There used to be a lot of movies from the 40s and 50s with businessmen, you know, not to be sexist, but that's how it was back in those movies. When businessmen were showing standing up, dictating into either a dictaphone, which is a recorder, a voice recorder of sorts, or a human being, a secretary or clerk or something, and they'll say, you know, so-and-so, take a memo. And the person would rattle off this well-composed memorandum of multiple sentences and paragraphs. And you know, we thought nothing of it, but if you ever tried it, that is really hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, well, I always, one of my favorite things to remind my students, because they often turn in papers that look like they just rambled something off from the top of their head, is that one of the best things about writing is that you can edit it.
Yes.
You can go back. So that's how I've always used dictation on my iPhone, is ramble off something and then edit it. And generally, you know, for the use scenario where I'm walking somewhere and I just need to send a longer text message, it tends to work pretty well.
Interesting.
But then I also just use the one of those features that I don't think people remember, and that's just recording a quick voice message and sending it to someone in text, you know, or you can just hit the little microphone, not the dictation microphone, the other microphone, and just say whatever you're going to say, and then it gets sent as a audio file or audio snippet in text.
Nice, nice. Okay, next up, apparently a real files app that deals with real files from real devices, like a USB drive or an SD card or whatever.
But still no local file system.
No, so how's that going to work exactly?
People are just going to have to carry around a USB drive. It's interesting. It's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
I do have a few USB drives. So I think I've told the story before that on my keys at work, I have a little Swiss Army knife, and I do have one of the USB drives that comes out of it. And two times in the last year, one drive was down at exactly the moment I needed to get a file from my office computer to my classroom computer. Otherwise, I just let OneDrive sync those up. And so I did have to walk back to my office, plug in a USB drive, grab the file, walk over, etc. That's the only reason I see for using USB anymore is just that sort of use scenario. So I guess people are just going to have to throw a USB drive into their bag. Unfortunately, you won't get that solid storage. But most of the time I need that solid storage, it's because the file has to be mobile. You know, I think about keeping video files or something like that. The USB drive is sort of where they go in transit.
And, of course, this is an excellent way for Apple to sell an accessory that has a female USB Type-A connector that goes into either a Lightning and or a USB-C, depending on which device you have. So, you know, they'll charge $39.95 or $49.95 each, and some number of people buy it and then find out they never use it, but they've already bought it, so oh well.
You know, I was looking at, this is another little off topic, but eventually I will upgrade my MacBook. And I was looking at, you know, how much would it cost me to get, you know, when I eventually do move to a USB-C MacBook and all the dongles and adapters and that kind of stuff. Not cheap, but hopefully it'll last me a long time. You know, hopefully we'll be on USB-C for a while.
I should make a little clarification to what we just said, by the way, about what do you do with it. I'm just reading through what files is going to do. In iOS 13, or I guess iPad OS 13, whatever they call it, there is going to be a new downloads folder to which you can copy your files from your device, and which can be accessible from Safari and Mail. So, you know, if you needed to carry a bunch of files for, you know, like you say, you're going to send out a Vita or a resume or whatever, or, you know, copies of your paper, you know, I can see that. So, interesting.
Yeah, it's just the weird sort of setup of, right now, I have that with OneDrive, where if I need to send a file through Microsoft Outlook, I can attach it directly through OneDrive. I don't even have to use a OneDrive link. It'll actually download the file to my device, put it on the email, send it out. So the only time I would need that use scenario would be I'm at a conference in a basement without Wi-Fi, and someone says, I want a copy of your paper. Here's a USB drive. Put it on there. And, you know, it just seems like more likely someone would just say, here's my business card. Just send it to me via chance. Or here, type the email to me, and then just, you know, when your device next, you know, connects up, you can send it out. Or so it's just finding those use scenarios anymore where you don't have internet connection.
Yeah. And I should note, although it isn't in this list of things that can be done in the, the files app or some of the other things, apparently mouse support is coming too under the accessibilities tab. So, you know, it's one of those things because Android has been able to support a mouse for years and years and years now. I've never used it except to demonstrate it could be done. It just, you know, I don't know. Just one of those things.
I do wonder about mouse support quite a bit because I use a mouse everywhere except my iPad.
Right, because you can't.
And I don't know why I don't really know why I don't miss it so much on my iPad.
It is surprising.
I was looking at the, you know, I am still using the version 1 of the Apple trackpads and Magic Mouse, the ones that you actually have to put batteries in.
Right.
And I just haven't upgraded to the new ones that are rechargeable, even though it would let me stop having to keep little, you know, rechargeable batteries around, just because I don't really see a need, and I don't see myself even using a mouse that much. When I travel, the mouse is something I grab and take with me. I have no idea if I've ever needed it. It's probably just taking up space in my bag.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That said, you know, I cannot live without a mouse on most other devices. I have a perfectly usable trackpad in front of me on this MacBook Air I'm using, and I use it on occasion, but quite frankly, for heavy lifting, I have a Logitech Bluetooth. Actually, it's a RF mouse. Bluetooth is just too flaky for this anyway. Although I do have Bluetooth mice on other devices. Anyway, so Safari itself, it's going to get a download manager and a, you know, photo upload resize, which is kind of interesting. Per site settings for camera, microphone, location access, were also very interesting. Weak password warnings, which most sites give you a warning about that. And now you can encrypt end-to-end with iCloud, which is kind of neat. Desktop websites. You know, I thought we were already using desktop websites on iPad. I guess not. I guess it's still doing something.
No, there are at least three or four websites I go to regularly that force you into a mobile view. It's horrible. And those are the times when I would, you know, it's how do I convince you to show me the full thing?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm happy about with that.
And, oh, you'll be thrilled with this. 30 new keyboard shortcuts when you use external keyboard. So 30 things you won't remember.
Not a single one.
And you know, I do use a physical keyboard with my iPad normally when I'm in a longish meeting and I need to take notes for myself. So I do use a keyboard. I carry a very tiny, I think it's called a Jellycomb is the brand. Really tiny keyboard with me these days, and it works great. Okay, dark mode. They have a whole section on dark mode. You can schedule them. You can use them you can optimize them for wallpapers. You can, oh my gosh. Works with favorite apps. So many things. Okay, next. A whole bunch of items under privacy and security, including application permissions, more granularity in choosing, application transparency, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth location privacy enhancements, with your consent, blah, blah, blah. And then also some anti-fingerprinting protection in Safari, which is kind of interesting. This is related to browser fonts that have been... Anti-fingerprinting. Okay. Still not sure what it is. It says protections related to browser fonts have been extended. They're fingerprinting you digitally, I assume, not your actual fingerprints. Especially since iOS devices... Wait, does the iPad... Yeah, I guess a new iPad still does fingerprints. It's not... It doesn't have facial recognition. Okay, sign in with Apple, which is their new... And, you know, this is only under iPad OS. It's not under iOS. But anyway... Signing in with Apple, which kind of, you know, is an alternative to logging in with your Facebook ID or your Google ID or anything else. So I guess it could be interesting. Not sure why people would switch over to it, especially if you're, you know, you're a PC user. Hide my email from a particular app. Okay. And next thing, something you're interested in, HomeKit, as I recall.
But, you know, we can figure this out later. No, I actually am interested in sign-in with Apple.
Oh, you are?
Mostly just because...
And we're back. John's Mac decided to reboot. It's become sentient.
Yeah, it is.
Didn't like what we're saying about, you know, iPad OS. So.
But no, I do like the sign-in with Apple ID feature, mostly just because it's privacy-focused. The idea that all developers would be my name, a unique identifier number that they could build off of, and maybe an email address that would go through a privacy relay.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of like that. So I do plan on, if I can swap over, and I also hope that a lot of developers will use it whenever they need to do authentication in their app, especially if it's an iOS-only app. And there are ways for non-iOS apps to access it. Apple has released Sign In with Apple ID JavaScript implementation. So if you are building an app that has a actual web-based login or has an Android version, you could still use Sign In with Apple ID as your authentication backend.
Okay. And I think earlier, before the podcast, you were saying something about HomeKit, or did I mishear you?
We said that at the beginning of the podcast. This has been a long one, so we've been talking a lot. Yeah, HomeKit has a number of new things coming to it, including the secure video that actually stores in iCloud, which is nice if you have video at your house of something and you need to access it, and maybe your home internet connection goes down while you're traveling, and you're just like, I just want to check the, you know, the last few moments of the video, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I see some cool stuff with that as well.
Cool. All right. This is a long list. Photos, yeah. All new photos tab, smart photo previews, basically bigger thumbnails, remove similar shots and clutter. Not sure I want that. I hope that's optional. On this day.
Are you like me where you take two photos of everything just to make sure you get a good one?
Pretty close, you know?
Yeah.
And it might be subtle, but they're not duplicates in my eyes.
That's very true.
On this day, which is kind of neat, it might kind of go well with your Pixel a day. So you can go back and add stuff. Birthday mode. If you have birthdays assigned to people in your People app, on the photo tab will highlight your photos of them on their birthday. Oh, that's kind of nice. Zoom in, zoom out. Search enhancements. And its search is pretty good. It's not quite as good as Google Photos, but it's getting much better. Screen recording smart album. All your new screen recordings are now in one place. Oh, that's good. I like that. Extended live photo playback. Oh, that's kind of neat too. When you press and hold, photos will automatically extend a video when you have live photos taken within 1.5 seconds of each other. So you can take like multiple live photos and have them stitched together, it sounds like. Music for memories, it's okay, and especially since it's all generic stuff, I guess. Oh no, based on what you listen to in music apps, it's not generic stuff. Enhanced control, filter control, video editing support, that's kind of neat. Non-destructive video edits, that's very good. I guess white balance, vibrance, which is really saturation. Sharpen vignette, pinch to zoom support, pretty cool. Performance, yeah, we talked about the smaller apps and downloads. It doesn't say how it's going to do it, though. Okay, we got to go look that up. Okay, Apple Arcade. They still don't have a price. No, I guess they did announce prices. $10 a month. $99 a month. 100 amazing new games. You know, some of the games did sound interesting in the last keynote they did a couple of months ago. I'm really not a game player, though, so I'm not sure $10 a month is worth it for me. Don't know. Unless there's really something like, if they bring back Civilization Revolution, then I'll pay $10 a month. You know, with monthly enhancements or something. I don't know, John, is something you're gonna do?
Probably not, but I do enjoy some of the gameplay on iOS. Yeah. I just have to see how much they actually do with it.
Yeah. You know, there's really only two games that I ever got hooked on iOS. That's Civilization Revolution, none of the follow-ups, and yes, I bought Civilization 2 and I bought 6 and or whatever else I bought, which was kind of expensive, but I really not good. And Plants vs. Zombies, the first one. Second one was terrible.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
Accessibility, we kind of talked about the mouse support earlier, which isn't in here, I think. But at any rate, so rich text editing, custom words, on-device processing, which is important. Accurate dictation through Siri. Use a Siri speech, interesting. Navigation commands. That remains to be seen, because I still can't open some apps, let's say when I'm driving. And so I always have to start, you know, like say the podcast app I prefer instead of Apple's terrible podcast app. Siri improves voice, blah, blah, blah. Siri's supposed to be smarter. Well, that remains to be seen. That's pretty much it. Oh, and you can use Siri to tune into your favorite radio station. I don't know. I guess if you've got an unlimited bandwidth, bandwidth per month, which I don't, by the way. AR support for motion capture. That's kind of interesting. That is really interesting. I'm kind of curious about that one. Okay, share sheet. When you share photo documents, receive a signal. Maps. Oh, this is your favorite. Okay, look around. That's a street view-like thing. Share ETA. Is that kind of what you do now? Like when you go drive up to see your folks and stuff?
Occasionally, although I generally just let them have access to my location data and then they can look it up as they're interested. Okay.
So share ETA is actually kind of a good thing, but that assumes that the other person has an iPhone. And since, you know, the vast majority of people have Android phones, I'm not sure how that works, but interesting. Real-time transit, which Google already has. Flight status, which is kind of neat. Place cards. Eh. And then MapKit. Okay. Messages, share name and photo. Eh, I don't see anything. New animal. Okay, here we go. New animoji. Mouse, octopus, and cow. There you go, John. Three more to choose from.
I mean, you already got the one you wanted. Bunny rabbits.
I got the rabbit. I got the rabbit. Also, the dog was pretty good. And the boar, the wild boar, is actually pretty good.
I'm a fan of the dragon myself.
I have not used the dragon, I think. Reminders. Oh, here we go. Okay, all new design. Eh. Enhanced Siri intelligence. That assumes you think Siri's intelligent. it can add attachments. I'm still not seeing one. What did you want, John, on yours? You wanted dates, right?
Yeah, just a start date and an end date. Don't remind me about this until this time and tell me I need to get it done by this other.
I don't see anything about dates in here. Just kind of looking through the list. Okay, so I don't think it'll solve your... Oh, wait a minute. It is easier than ever to add times, dates, locations, flags. So maybe it does.
We will see.
We'll see. Oh. Mail, block sender, yeah, mute thread, format bar, yeah. iPad multitasking, see one message and copy and paste it into another. That's kind of useful. If I were using it for business, but I don't use it for business email, so it's not super. Notes, I use notes? I don't even know if I use notes. But anyway, you can use it for collaboration now, so that's neat. AirPods, okay, I don't have it, but you do. You can share music to two different AirPods. Did your wife get an AirPod?
She does not. Okay. So it will not be useful for us.
Okay, so, and I don't have an AirPod. My wife has one, but I don't, so none of us will be experiencing this AirPod sharing thing. Shared listening. HomePod, books. Read a book or listen to an audiobook for 5 minutes while in line to coffee. Okay. Business chat, don't care. Add attachments to events. That's interesting. I actually like that idea. It'd be nice to, you know, add a PDF of something before a meeting so I know where I have it. Contacts, new relationship labels. Okay. Like what? Hate this person? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Enemy.
You can create an emoji for yourself and other contacts instead of contacts. Okay, that's thrilling. Find my iPhone, find my friends. Music. Time sync lyrics. That's interesting. I can see where people would like that. Time-synced lyrics. Apple News, Reality Composer, Create OAR, Augmented Reality. For developers. Low Data Mode, just kind of going through it. Stocks, which I use. You know, everybody says they don't use it. I use the Stocks app every day. Voice Memos, Pinch to Zoom, Split Screen. And then there's stuff for Enterprise and... Oh, Game Controllers. Yeah, that's sort of interesting. You can use a PlayStation or Xbox One game controller on an iPad. I guess, why would you want that? Fortnite or something like that? I don't know. Again, not a serious gamer. I've got no idea. A whole bunch of updates for folks using iPadOS in India. That looks really important. Various other languages supported. I'm just scrolling through screen time. Wi-Fi. WPA3 Wi-Fi support. I don't have anything for that. Family sharing hotspot. Interesting.
Persistent personal hotspot sounds really interesting as well.
Yeah.
To be able to stay connected to an iPad personal hotspot even when your device sleeps.
Yeah.
So that's sort of...
That is interesting, actually. Assuming you're using your iPad as a hotspot, which I don't have... Unlike you, I don't have LTE on mine. So, and that is it for iPad, which is a lot. We've gone way over an hour. I hope I can comprise... Well, we also have two files because John's Mac rebooted in the middle. But we're still not...
And we also...
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about
Apple Watch. We're not done. Yeah. So, you know, we both have Apple Watches. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to use all the new features on my 3. You've got a 4, so you've probably got a better chance. What do you think? You looking forward to it?
I am. I like the new watch faces. You know, I understand the push to have... the apps that run locally without an iPhone and those sorts of things. And I will enjoy those in the couple of times a year that I'm doing something related to swimming, because I'm usually at a beach somewhere warm where I will turn off my iPhone so that it doesn't overheat.
Right.
And I'll just use my Apple Watch. So that will be useful for me in those times. But in reality, the thing, you know, it's Apple Watch is still very... very much growing on its own. So these are about the least exciting updates, I think, even though I think they're all good updates.
Now, one I found interesting is there's going to have, again, I don't know if it'll be on an older one like my Series 3, but a new noise monitoring feature. So I think that'll be kind of interesting only because I've become a kind of an open office anti-fan. And you know, I'm kind of always looking at what the aspects of open office designs are, including noise levels. So curious about that. I should note that I do have a third-party noise monitoring app on my iPhone, which I have used on occasion when there's construction and stuff. We try to figure out what the noise level is inside of an office, not so much outside. The new watch faces.
Any of them that can jam more information on. Most of the time, I'm always looking for more information to show on my watch face, except when I was on vacation. And because of where I was at, I just left it on the Mickey watch face the entire week. So that was good.
Basically, what I want they don't have, and that's a custom photo background with a full featured chronograph. You know, customizable chronograph. That's all I want. I think there is a chronograph, but there's a chronograph now, but it doesn't show the stuff I want.
You can't do it with the,
Yeah, it doesn't have the photo in the background, which is what I really want. So, okay. And, you know, little tip for folks who like to have photos on their watch, as I do, if you can't decide which photo to have, you can have a gallery that shows different photos every time you look at your watch. So you don't have to decide. Okay, so yeah, lots of stuff for watchOS 6. Hard to believe we're in watchOS 6 already.
Especially with all those people that said that no one was going to buy an Apple Watch. There was so much hate.
Are you looking at me now? Are you pointing at me?
No. You were at least remains to be seen. There were friends of ours, though, that were definitely of the belief that the Apple Watch was an extremely stupid thing. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of said the same thing about the AirPods. And looking around the world as I wander around these days, I'm clearly so wrong.
Because
that thing has taken off, you know, amongst what I call the civilians, right? The tech civilians who don't appear to be techies. Well, you're a techie, so you don't count. But but you know what I'm talking about, right? Just regular folks who don't look like they're techies. And even if they are, there's so many of them, you know, they all can't be techies.
The funny thing with the AirPods is I've owned them since they came out, but I've recently started putting them in my pocket every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because my thought was they used to live in my bag, and my bag just goes to work and sometimes just stays on my desk. The idea was maybe if I had these in my pocket everywhere I went, I would use them more, especially for phone calls and things like that where I didn't want to hold the phone up to my ear. I could just easily pop these out. What I found is that did not happen at all.
Oh, really?
On phone calls, I take so few phone calls that I don't really think
remember.
I'm not usually in a spot where would pull them out anyway. If I'm at home and I'm talking to someone for a longer period of time, they're at home. Or if I'm at my office, they're at my office. So I think it's a good idea to have them because I do think I use them more when I have them. AKA if I take them in my bag or if I put them in my pocket, but putting them in my pocket did not have the result I thought it would. So I've thought about downgrading them back to my bag during the day, but
you know, it's interesting because, you know, in TV shows, or at least some I've watched, you know, people are driving along and a phone call comes in and they have the presence of mind that they don't already have a Bluetooth headset in their ear, but they have the presence of mind to pick it up from their little dish in a car and put it in your ear. And that is remarkable. I would never think of doing that. You know? I just hit the button on my Apple that's, you know, sitting on my dashboard. It's got a little holder, and that would probably be it. And I hope that it routes Bluetooth through my car audio correctly, which it does maybe half the time. I'm always amazed at people who do that.
Speaking of car audio, I've been very happy with CarPlay and car audio in general on newer vehicles. Because my wife and I will travel quite a bit, and my iPhone, if I'm driving, is the one that we connect up.
Right.
And then she'll decide to take a nap, and that's when I usually pull out an AirPod, put one in just so I can listen to an audiobook or a podcast. And not disturb her. And it's pretty amazing how well the handoff happens, where my old car really hated if I tried to do anything it wasn't expecting. The new car, if you say, you know what, I want actually the audio to go to the AirPod instead of going through the car audio, it doesn't have a problem with it. So
nice. Now, of course, I don't have a new car to experience, but my daughter does. And she has both Apple's CarPlay and Android's whatever it's called, Auto whatever. And it seems to work quite well for her, so I'm impressed. If I ever get a new car, I would definitely look for one with CarPlay or something in it. One question for you, since I don't do this, because I have, you know, like, I just have like a Bluetooth transceiver that plays over my FM. So that's how old my car is. So when you start up your car, does Apple Music always play the same song when you boot up? I ran into that when I rented a car a while back.
My old car used to do that,
okay.
Which is very annoying.
Yeah.
The new car, the odd thing is it's got an XM radio, and it just defaults to that. And okay. So even if the last thing I was listening to was Apple Music,
right?
It because it takes about 20 seconds for the connection to fully happen and everything when you first get in the car.
Yeah,
I have to then switch manually back over to Apple Music because it'll already be playing XM and thinking I just want to stay on that. So that's sort of annoying where it doesn't always resume exactly what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah. I about a couple of years ago, I was in San Francisco and I rented a car. And, you know, it's like every time I started a car, it would start playing the same song over Bluetooth from my iPhone. And it was maddening because I didn't want to play that song every time I started a car. But, okay. And we've got one more thing for our extra long podcast, and that's John's tip of the week.
Yeah, so I have three MacBooks that are within close proximity to me right now. Two of them are older, and thus they don't get regular updates anymore for Mac OS.
Yeah.
They are, you know, basically legacy support. And so what I do periodically is I create bootable USB drives for them with the most recent version of the last operating system they can get. And this is, if you don't realize it, if you ever have to re-image an Apple laptop, you don't get, like, you know, a standard set of recovery disks or anything like that with them. You can do an internet recovery, which downloads everything off the internet, but of course that takes a while. So I recommend, if you have time and you've got some USB drives, download the installers on the devices. So one is Mac OS El Capitan is the one on one of these devices, the other is High Sierra, and get some USB drives and create a dedicated USB drive so that you have an installer. That way, if you ever do want to just wipe clean, start fresh on your MacBook, you've got everything you need right there without having to download it.
Great tip. And as you said to me earlier before we started, you can do it manually from command line, but there are third-party tools to help you do this.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. And we are at the end. We are well over an hour. I think we're like an hour 15, hour 20, something crazy like that. So
we apologize to everyone who's had to listen to us.
Yeah. But we are at the end. I'm almost breathless. Okay. MobileViews Podcast 294. Pretty close to all we talked about was iPad OS and iOS 13 and the surprise I think we both had at the breadth and depth of the announcements. I'm really looking forward to this update. I'm not sure I'm, like I said, looking forward enough to wipe out iOS 10 and lose my favorite game, but I will think about it. And I have other iPads, so it's, you know, I'll be updated on the iPad Mini 5 and the iPad Pro 10.5. Anyway, MobileViews Podcast 294, and we are out.